Welcome to the Hands On Business podcast, and thank you for joining me. I'm your host, Hakeem Adebiyi, and this is definitely the podcast you want to come to if you're a business leader or a business owner and you're trying to get some tips and tricks on how to grow your business. Today, we're going to be talking to a guest who's grown a technology business, started in 2012, and actually in 2018, he was on the Sunday Times Virgin Atlantic Fast Track 100 ranked as the 10th fastest growing private company in the UK. And what we're going to be talking to Ben Chalevan about today is how to turn an idea into a real business. You're going to find that it's a very informative podcast, it's engaging, and there's going to be loads of good takeaways. So I would advise you to stay tuned and listen all the way to the end. Welcome to a new episode of the Hands On Business Podcast. Delighted to welcome you back, even. And if it's your first time, hopefully you're in for a treat. Now, today's guest has built a technology business. Yes, there are some of those in the UK, not all in California. And he did it with his co-founder and took the seed of an idea in 2012 to the point that in 2018, the Sunday Times Virgin Atlantic Fast Track 100 ranked them as the 10th fastest growing private company in the UK. So I'd say that's quite impressive growth. So probably you do want to listen when we discuss how to turn an idea into a real business. So welcome, Ben Chalevan.
Morning. How are you doing? All right, Hakeem?
I am very, very well. Thank you, Ben. How are you?
I'm very good. Thanks. Very good. Obviously, we've just had a quick brief chat before this podcast, and it's, really looking forward to getting going.
Lovely. So I think the way to kick off, or the best way to kick off, is you want people to get to know you, Ben. So just tell me about who you are and your journey from 2012 and what that idea actually was.
Yeah. So I'm the managing director of ISO Spaces. I set it up just over 10 years ago with my friend and business partner, Greg Curtis. So we originally met working at stockbrokers back in 2010, maybe. And we'd always had our own idea that we wanted to run our own businesses. We got on really well. We had a few different ideas of what we wanted to do. So we were based down in Cornwall, where Cornwall itself, the industry down here is very heavily tourism based, where we didn't particularly want to get into that. And we wanted to, our idea was to build a scalable business that could be national or international, not something that was, there's a lot of people start hospitality style business down in Cornwall. Not saying that's easy, but it's the sort of low hanging fruit where we wanted to build more of a global monster, really. I suppose we're both megalomaniacs a little bit in that way. But we were going to start making shipping containers into home offices. That was our original plan. So we bought with a hydraulic opening front and sort of high-end fancy, which probably would have done really well the last couple of years in the pandemic, to be honest, but we're maybe 8-10 years ahead of the game on that one. But we bought a shipping container and we had it in a fabrication yard, and we sort of, we'd be there at sort of 4:30 in the morning before going to work when the market's open there in the evening, trying to work on it ourselves and convert it into this hydraulic opening front with quad winches, hydraulic arms, the lot. We thought it'd be easy. We thought we'd basically do we good sales and marketing people was our original, original sort of backgrounds for both of us. And we thought we'd be able just to sort of sell the idea, maybe do a bit of design work and someone else would make these units, but there wasn't anybody to make them. So we realized we were going to have to make them ourselves, which involved, I'll touch on a bit later, how we involved setting up factories and the evolution of that, and how we ended up digitizing a lot of those processes as well. But going back to where we were then, we were in the stockbrokers. We both got really drunk on red wine one night and borrowed $100,000 personally and quit our jobs, basically, and decided that was how we were going to start the business properly. So I woke up one morning very hungover, looked at my online bank account, had $104,000 in it, and I was a bit like, so I did actually do that. Greg and I both quit our jobs and focused on ISO Spaces full time. So that was where the sort of journey started. We originally were making sort of shipping container bars, restaurants. I'm sure you've seen loads of those sort of pop-ups knocking around most of the cities, festivals and events. And then eventually someone said to us, could you make houses out of these? And we said, yeah, definitely. Of course we can. And then we obviously had no idea how to do that. So, there's something probably is a bit of a tip for this. Say yes to everything and then work out how to do it. You know, so don't sort of be limited by with your ambitions. So we ended up building 50 houses in Ealing, for Ealing Council, out of shipping containers, and then we built another 150 and then another 210, all in a factory we set up in Cornwall, which we wanted to. So the construction is a bit of the last wild west of the big industries. You know, it's still very much old school developers. People are like, we do it this way because we've always done it this way. Lots of consultants and lots of people trying to get into the process and complicate something that's essentially very simple. And I'll talk in a bit about how we've done that through technology as we've grown the business. But we learned how to make this housing. We ran it like a car production plant. You know, I'm sure you've seen videos or you've seen on the TV, or maybe you've even been to a car production plant where it just runs down a production line and you add bits as it goes along. We did that with houses. So you'd start from scratch and they'd be square or oblong modules, and they'd come along and you'd fit the insides, fit the plumbing, fit the electrics, fit the windows, fit the finish, bang, out the factory, onto site. So we could build a house in 10 days, which is very, very quick.
So yeah, very, very impressive. So in terms of the idea, because what I've noticed when I speak to entrepreneurs, they tend to have loads of different ideas and they've got ideas rimming through your head, and you were saying that you're chatting to your partner and you have different things you want to work together. So what made that the idea that you decided you wanted to go with?
Well, I mean, Greg is very much the ideas man. I'm more of a numbers guy. So the way that we work really, really well together, Greg is very commercially minded and brilliant. He comes up with most of the ideas, where I'm much more operationally focused than he is probably. So I'm more of a finisher completer. So that's why we work really, really well as a pair. The reason we settled on this idea, because ISO Spaces was originally called ISO Money, it was called ISO Cabins, it had been called many different things, and there was just nobody else really doing it. So you couldn't just go and buy a shipping container bar or a shipping container from somebody. You would have had to go to a series of different people and get that made. There wasn't anybody offering a turnkey service. Very similar to, in 10 years later, ISO Spaces is now a technology-driven turnkey modular contractor. So we still haven't lost the ethos of our ideas, which is we do everything. Yeah. You don't have to worry about it. It's why people still use travel agents. You know, people want you to take it and they want everything done for you. They don't want to go, well, yeah, but I could get the flights for this and the hotel for this. Don't get me wrong, there are still plenty of people who want to do that, but we don't want to work with them. It's we're offering buildings as a service almost. You know, if you're a council, a public body, a developer, you've got a patch of land and you want to put 200 houses on it. Do you want to just go to somebody? Can you do that? We say, yeah, we'll do it all. This is what it costs.
So in terms of the technology element, because the way you described it, most people and my listeners will probably think, well, that sounds like a construction business. So just explain exactly how.
Yes, we set up another business to complement this business in 2018 called Modular Mapper, which was a technology business. So we wanted to have some software made. So the way that construction and buildings work and the built environment is you start off with a design, a concept, and it moves through a stage of processes, gates, whatever you want to call it, as it moves and progresses the design, gets more and more detailed, and then eventually it goes to a planning application, and then it gets built. So you've got two elements to where we have the technology. So first of all, it's through the design. So all of our buildings are pre-designed down to the last screw, where you could walk around one with a VR headset on and know exactly what it was going to be like before you even bought it. That's kind of almost like the back end technology. You know, you can sit there and flick, flick, flick and change the wall colors. I'm sure you've seen all of that. So we wanted to get some front end technology made, which essentially did the feasibilities and the planning app. So normally you would pay an architect and a series of consultants anything from 10 to 50K to get a site feasibility done, get it all drawn up, all of the visuals. So we created some software that does that for free in 2 minutes, which would normally take 3 months and 50K. So we used to think in-house, we've got a team of designers, you know, they're fantastic, really, really talented people. And they use some unbelievable computer programs that I don't understand, but they were drawing up 20 or 30 schemes a year, which then have to be costed and run through. And being a salesperson, you know, that was two or three of those converted. So, you converting them at 10%. So I was like, well, if we drew up 200 or 300 schemes, we'd be converting 20 or 30. And we didn't want to employ a design team of 80 people. So we use AI to do that, basically. So we created Modular Mapper. We had some quotes from various software developer companies or development companies to have it done. And the cheapest quote was $500,000 to get it started. So we just bought that company that gave us the quote and said, right, actually, we'll just acquire you. So Greg and I acquired a company called Project 2VR and turned it into Modular Mapper. So Modular Mapper now has a team of full stack developers who are absolute geniuses. That, you know, they're putting that into practice every day. The software is evolving. So the software now, you could say to me now, right, I've got this site in Manchester, you know, I bought it is with whoever, or I've got the option to buy it. What can you put on it? Feed the site into the software. It'll plan houses, hotels, offices, schools, whatever. It'll use that all using AI. It'll generate 3D visuals, renders. Yeah, I want to go for that one. I want to change it so it's a brick clad. It's got these windows. Add in solar panels. I want it to be net zero building. I want to know what the embodied carbon will be. Software works all of that out. Press a button, bang, it generates all of that in a document that tells you how long it's going to take to build, how much it's going to cost, all of those details, what the finishes are, how many houses it's going to be, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, which would normally take 2 or 3 months.
Yeah, I need that for my house, to be honest. That'd be really perfect. So what's the biggest part of your business? Is it that modular mapper sound?
So the biggest part is still the back end construction, but a lot of that is managed by the technology.
Yeah.
Where, you know, there are still people building with sticks and Sellotex in fields in this country, mainly. Yeah, I was on site when we were going to record this a couple of days ago, and I couldn't make it because I had to go on a site visit, and that was to look at a site where a contractor had basically gone pop and left a half built site. And these are just timber framed houses in the middle of the site, soaking wet timber. So, and you just think, well, why would you not build in a technology controlled indoor environment? You know, generally. So we everything we can, we put in tech in there. And tech is such a broad phrase, right? Tech can be someone with an iPad photographing the build so that in 3 years later, when you go, oh, right, well, what was in the makeup of the wall in unit A34? You just go, hit the iPad, go back to that, and you find the pictures, and so you've got it, all that detail there. You know, I'm sure everybody's heard of Grenfell's terrible tragedy with the burning of the Grenfell Tower. If they'd had the digital quality control systems we had in place, they'd be able to look back now and go, well, how did this happen? And you'd have a complete audit trail of all of that. I'm not saying it would have prevented it, but it should have. But you know, you've got to embrace and use the technology where you can, you know, particularly. We originally thought the technology we'd bring into construction would be going back to the production line and how you make things sort of robot style technology for production, you know, robot arms, etc. But the cost behind that is phenomenal. You know, you'd be talking £100 million plus investment to make a factory work like that. And that's just too much. So we thought, where else can we invest in lower hanging fruit technology that can have a significant impact across our business? And that is essentially the digital design tool.
It's basically vertical integration, isn't it? You're finding different
Exactly that. So we've always worked on a vertically integrated supply chain, and really we want to be a vertically integrated business. So construction works in REBA stages, which is REBA 0 to 7. We used to just do number 4, and that was building.
Okay.
And now we do every single one. And as much of that we can put technology in. Obviously, you always need the people to use the technology, but it's just, you know, it's if you can use the tech to do a lot of the legwork, you know, we can make instant decisions using our technology. The technology drives the decisions. So our technology is essentially a data aggregator as well. So if you're putting your site in, it'll have a look through the history, and it'll tell you if there's ever been any planning apps, if there's ever been any flood risks, if anything's ever happened on that site. It'll know it.
So you started that effectively 10 years ago, and you said there was nothing like it at the time. Is there anything like this now?
No, so we've only started the tech part of it, like the modular map, about 4 years ago.
All right,
there's nothing like it out there. So it really is game changer. So we use it ourselves in-house as ISO spaces, and we are just in the process of licensing it out to some other people who do the same sort of business as us so they can use our technology. So we'll essentially be putting it on a SaaS model.
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah, but it'll save them absolutely thousands. We think it probably saved ISO Spaces 750K last year.
Bloody hell, well,
as a straight cash cost saving.
Well, that's definitely worth having, isn't it? So I mean, because the way you talk through it, it sounds like it was all really simple. You had an idea back in the way, you know, when you're stockbrokers and you just got together with an inventive and creative partner and it all popped out. It never really works like that. So what are the biggest challenges that you face when you have the idea and you try to turn it into reality? What are the biggest challenges?
Yeah, so I mean, a lot of challenges is around cash flow and cash and being able to have a business that runs today and makes money today. Everybody can have ideas about a business that makes money 3 years in the future. I can give you 100 ideas this morning. Yeah. But if you can't make the money today to feed all the mouths in the business, you know, we've got 25, 30 full-time staff now. Our wage bill is probably 100K a month. Or, you know, you need to bring in enough money to pay for that today. You can't just sit there having great ideas. And, you know, this is Greg and I have had, mainly Greg, loads of different ideas for other stuff over the years as the businesses have come. We work hard to shelve those because he who chases many things catches none, as they say. It's, you know, very, very important to maintain your focus. And I think that's one thing, you know, it is really easy just to think of all these big ideas and just not worry about today's cash. Yeah, I'm a big cash flow man. If there's no cash, it can't flow.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really, I just ran out that he who chases many things catches none. It's so true. And actually, I had a mentor many years ago who had a very large business. He's now retired, he was my mentor, and one of the things he said to me, he said, "Hakeem, if you ever set up a business, cash flow," he said, "that's what kills most businesses. They go into business, they have these great ideas, they start spending loads of money, get a lovely office space, and then after about a month and a half, they think, oh, we're not making any money, and then they need to go and get a job again."
Exactly. It's, you know, my dad always used to say that to me as well. He said, you know, P&L is one thing, but if you haven't got actual cash flow, then, you know, there's nothing left. So we've had loads of ups and downs. We nearly went bust in the first year, and Barclays gave us a $5,000 overdraft to help finish a unit, which we sold to Heineken for sort of 60-70K, which allowed us to reinvest and keep going. We've always reinvested into the business as well and invested in our people. So we've got excellent retention. We've got a brilliant team of people. We've hired a lot of people that we've known and worked with over the years. You know, we've got our operations director, Carlos. I've been working with him for 20 years, you know, in different businesses. So another thing I'd say is if you work with good people who you know and you can trust and you can hire them. Yeah, you know, we've got some of the guys that work for us that and girls that I've, you know, known for a long time that I've let's call it headhunted through relentlessly saying, come and join us. Because we're in a bit of a niche industry. A lot of people are saying, Ben, you know, it sounds great, but I don't know anything about modular, volumetric, digital construction and prop tech. I said, don't worry, nor do I. You know, we'll learn together. But I'm a really big believer in hire good people. And, you know, you can train skills. You can't train someone to be a good person. You know, genetics.
I've read that in, I can't remember, it one of Jim Collins' books. It was Good to Great or Build to Last, or one of the others. He's had about 3 or 4. And he basically said, and I remember reading it on holiday when I was a national sales manager, and it's like a light bulb moment. He basically said, like, you're effectively on a journey. He said, your company's a bus. And he said that, you know, you just want to get good people on the bus. He said, even if you don't know at that point what you want those people to do, just get them on the bus because you'll find something for them to do.
Exactly that. We've got a guy who works for us now, a graduate engineer, and he just applied for the job like 3 or 4 times. He just went, I don't care what I do, I just want to work with it. I'm like, get him in. You know, if his attitude's that good, we'll find something for doing it. You know, and he's really flourishing now. And it's, you know, you really can't train that attitude. But on the flip side of that as well, and this comes back to your original question, which we started about 3 or 4 minutes ago before we went off the tangent about where the problems come in, and there is problems finding specific skills. So, and it does make a big difference when you bring in, we've got fantastic heads of construction and quantity surveyors now, very, very knowledgeable and experienced in their field. And to have that experience brought in is really fantastic, but it's not easy to always find those skill sets. So going back to your your business quotes, there's one that I always go back to from Steve Jobs that says, we don't hire people so we can tell them what to do. We hire people so they can tell us what to do.
Yeah.
And that for me is a quote that's always resonated, because I know you know, a little about a lot, basically. I don't know. I am not an expert in it. Well, I suppose I'm a bit of an expert in modular construction just by there being a lack of other experts. But yeah. It's, you know, I'm not a specialist in anything, but I know a little about a lot. But you want to get the people in who know a lot about a little, maybe.
Yeah.
A lot about a lot, ideally. You know, they've been above, right? But it's a really key thing. Our people are the most important thing in our business, whatever we do. You know, we're talking about technology. That is not as important as our people. You know, they're everything. We work really hard with our staff to, it's much easier to retain than recruit. You know, we flex all the hours out. We've recently gone down to a 4-day week. We have early finishes. People work from home some days, mix it up however they want to. And it's really, really important to me that we, you know, that it's a happy place for people to work. I used to work for one of the big banks, and I had to quit after 6 months because it was so, I went in there every day and it was like people were suicidal. You know, they just hated working there. And I was like, I can't come in here every day. You know, there's people have been there for 25 years. You think, what? You like, you know, it's horrendous. And I think Greg and I have always said the culture of our business, we want it to be somewhere we want to work. So, you know, the stockbrokers we worked at beforehand, it was great. There was loads of people our own sort of age at the time. We were in our 20s. It was a real sort of, not quite the Wolf of Wall Street, but, you know, that sort of really good culture of everyone got on. And I think we wanted to take the good bits of that and bring that into our business, where you've got that culture of everybody getting on, everybody wanting to succeed and win together. You know, everybody in our business is a shareholder. Everybody's on incentive schemes and everybody's pulling together. In fact, later today, I'm doing an all-staff business update. So every 6 months, we'll have a little mini business plan, get everyone either sat down, dialed in, depending where they are, and just have a run through, just to make so everyone knows where the business is, what the direction of travel is, and what their roles within the business are delivering as part of the overall game. So we work on a 100 and 300 day plan. So the idea being 100 days, if you do, you know, break it down into bite-sized chunks and you achieve all the things in the 100 day plan, that will ultimately activate the 300 day plan. And it makes, because you've got to have targets and you've got to have, I'm a big believer in the list. So I use a program called Any.do, and I have that all into my calendars and whatever. So I know I can bring it up on my screen now and see, right, these are the 7 meetings I've got to do today. I've also got to do that. I've also got to pick up my dry cleaning, whatever it might be. And then there's stuff that I'm doing tomorrow, the day after, stuff that I can do in the next month, and stuff that I'm going to do one day. You know, and it's just, and I think that's probably because I'm task orientated.
Yeah, no, I'm very similar, actually. I mean, I just use OneNote at the moment, but I use OneNote in the calendar. But I am obsessive. I think people think I'm like the spreadsheet king, because I have like objective and, you know, what we're doing, where we're going, exactly as you said, what's the plan, you know, because I think I don't know if it's because I'm anally retentive, but I feel much more comfortable when I know what the direction of travel is. And I think it's a lot better for the people when they know what the direction of travel is.
Yeah, definitely. And that's what, you know, people want to know what they're working towards rather than just their individual bits. You know, everyone's part of the same goal. And I generally say to people, we're in the problem solving game, because everything's a problem. Yeah. Generally, you know, you are solving someone's problem, whether that problem is a large problem, like they need 100 houses for people, or a small problem, like they can't find any windows for somebody. You know, you're problem solving all the time. That's life, really.
No, it is. And it's really interesting the way you spoke about it's the people business, because everybody says that, but very few people actually live it. So I don't think I've ever spoken to anybody in any business of any size who says, no, it's all about the product or it's all about the service. So, it's about the people.
Yeah.
And then you say, oh, great. So what do you do for your people? Well, I'm not really that interested in the people. They work very hard. I get good. And you think, right, well, it's not really all about the people, is it?
Exactly. And it really is all about the people, you know. And we think we've got huge sort of staff loyalty from the way that we are as employers. We're extremely flexible. We really reward the right behaviours and growth. We want everyone to grow. We say to a lot of people who come into our business, look, you know, you're essentially running your business within our business. We're just going to tell you what, you know, we're expecting as an output, how you get there. If you want our help and you want us to tell you, great, but you know, we're hiring intelligent people who can work their own stuff out.
Yeah, no, I don't think that's the way it should be. So just going back a bit, about this idea into reality. Because there's lots of people, there are people I speak to who will then say, oh, I had the idea for the iPhone, or I had the idea for that. So how do you get that idea?
Greg, my business partner, thinks he came up with HelloFresh, Uber.
So how do you get that idea out? So I'm sitting here, I've got an idea, and I'm thinking, right, what do I do with it then? Because I think it's a great idea. I don't think anyone else has had it.
I immediately put it into a spreadsheet and attached some numbers to it. What's it going to cost? What can you sell it for? What's it going to make? What? Very easy to do product and market research today because of the internet. Yeah. So generally, if you've had an idea, somebody else has had it too. There are many original ideas out there. Although I've got a couple that I think are great. I'm not going to tell you because nobody's done them. But then they say that the ideas that are the most successful are the ones that would help you in your day-to-day life, essentially, or what you do that are solving real problems. There's no point sitting there thinking, it'd be brilliant if I invented a flying bike to miss the traffic, you know? That's not the silver bullet thinking. It depends what you're looking for, but, you know, you've got to make sure it's an operationally functional idea that's going to actually work. So I would just sort of sit down. I would just Google it. Google the idea.
No, I like that. Yeah. So basically, Google it. What would help you? Stick it in the spreadsheet and put some costs around.
Yeah, that's it.
What would I charge? How much going to cost me?
Exactly. Because if it can't make a margin, then it's just an idea, and that's where it needs to stay.
So I mean, you won this award in the Fast Track because I'm fascinated about people who win awards. Yeah. How did that happen and how did it feel?
We got approached by the Fast Track, which is sadly finished last year, as it was his own company set up by a guy called Hamish, who is friends with Richard Branson. And so it was sponsored by Virgin, and Richard Branson, obviously being a successful entrepreneur, billionaire, he likes entrepreneurial and growth businesses. So in conjunction with the Sunday Times, and they just got in touch with us and said, look, we did a couple of Crowdcube raises. So back in 2016, we wanted to raise 300 grand at a 3 million valuation, and we ended up doing it 450K at 4.5 million. And then we went back to Crowdcube in 2018 and raised at 16 million. So, valuation. So the second Crowdcube raise, we'd valued at 16.8 million. So we'd quintupled our valuation in 2 years. Obviously, that gets out in the media and in the business world. So they got in touch with us and said, basically, the Fast Track works on percentage of growth. And it was like, you've grown 500% in 2 years or whatever it was. And then you submit a load of documents and what have you. And then they publish a list. And we were the 10th fastest growing company in the UK that year. So got to go to some brilliant events, met loads of really, really great people. Alan Barrett, the guy who set up Grenade, Grenade Bars, his guerrilla marketing by driving orange tanks onto people's lawns. Fantastic. And so I've always tried to really maximize that network and meet, people that own Fever Tree and things like that. Yeah, brilliant, brilliant people. And we got to go to lunch at Richard Branson's house, which was actually a marquee on his lawn at his house in Oxford, which was incredible. Him speaking, his daughter speaking, head of Virgin Galactic, and then other really sort of, big hitters from business, fascinating to network and sit around and just be around those people. Really inspiring. And what started off as a company in Cornwall from two guys in a dirty shed, which is just down the road from where I'm sat now, actually, with a shipping container, and to be sort of sat in a marquee in Richard Branson's lawn felt pretty good.
Yeah, well, I can well imagine, and obviously you've come a long way from that two guys in a dirty shed, and you've grown the business quite exponentially. So if I've got a listener or viewers listening to this, what would you say? If you could think of, because you always like top tips, if you had five top tips, you might not get to five, because I always ask this question, people start struggling at three. But what would your top tips be for someone who wants to, who's where you were in 2012, but wants to get
to I mean, don't plan to make any money for a year. I speak to lots of entrepreneurs who are like, I've got a business plan, month three, I'm making 10 grand a month. Okay, you're not. It's simple as that. So you need to plan your business and your personal cash flow, because if you're worried about paying yourself and where the money's going to come from, I was lucky. I was single, no kids, didn't have to worry about, taking on a load of debt, essentially. I would say, that'd be another point. Debt funding, much better than equity funding. Don't give away your equity too soon. I've met several people, including a mutual friend of ours, actually, who have given away a lot of equity early on in a company and then lost control of it. And it's really killed an idea. So yes, hang on to equity for as long as possible. That's your gold, really. Don't be scared to ask for advice. So we've got a non-exec who sits on our board now. He's really highly placed corporate financier who works for one of the big banks. And, you know, don't be too, if you don't understand, ask, you know, you can't front it all out. But then there is also a certain element of fake it till you make it. You gotta project that front end of, you know, that you know what you're doing. Be confident that you do know what you're doing. And the biggest part is the people, back to that, and hiring. Don't be scared to hire people. Now, that might be as small a thing, or it's not, I'm not saying it's a smaller thing, but that might be hiring a PA or an admin that books your hotels, your travel, does the smaller jobs that you're doing yourself because you're trying to do everything and spin every plate, when actually your time is much more valuable being freed up to do what you're good at. Or, and you know, that might even be, you know, we used to do a little bit of the design ourselves. You know, I can't even draw a stick man. So, you know, hire good people that can do the jobs that you can't, and understand what you're good at and what you're not good at.
I think that's pretty good. So let me just say, plan cash flow, because I think that's important. I mean, we've discussed before, it takes lots of good businesses out right at the stage. Debt funding much better than equity. And hang on to your equity for as long as possible. Ask for advice, e.g. get non-executive on your board, etc., to make sure that, you know, they can advise you on things that you don't know. Fake it till you make it. I think you said earlier about, you know, just if they say, can you do this, you just say yeah and work out later, which I think is
just say yes. And probably a final bit, have a plan but be prepared to change it.
Yeah.
You know, so it is very important to me it comes back to what I was saying earlier about the lists. I mean, a to-do list is essentially a plan.
Yeah.
So I'm not a believer in War and Peace business plans. I've got my business plan open in front of me here, and it is 21 pages, including appendices.
Yeah. And all good business plans should be nice, short and sweet.
And it's like, you know, and I feel the same with board meetings. So our board meetings take 45 minutes and we have like a 10-page pack. But I also sit on the board as a non-executive director of a housing association, and their board packs are 500 pages.
Oh, yeah.
But it's good. So again, this, you know, I'm all for sharing best practice. So I took this role of a housing association to help pass on my skills as what I know as an expert in modular construction, but also there are customers generally. So I want to learn how they work from the inside. And the same across the industry. You know, I've been to hundreds of factories, design sites, because I want to know and I want to learn. There's no point sitting in your office at home, which is where I'm sat now, and just thinking, you know, Greg and I, we used to be a bit like, actually, it made me think, I've just watched a box set. It's been refreshed. Have you ever heard of The Lincoln Lawyer?
Yes, I have, yes.
There was a book originally by Michael Connelly, and then there was a film with Matthew McConaughey, and there's recently been a Netflix series. Yes. When Greg and I started out, we used to drive around in our old school Beamers and Mercs, basically anywhere. If you wanted to see us and someone, there was a potential, so we'd just get in the car and drive there. So we'd go and see anyone, anytime, any place, bang. Yep, we'd be on your door. And considering we live in Cornwall, it's not that accessible to get everywhere. So yeah, we'd be driving around, working out the back of a car, driving wherever we could. So that changed a lot for the better during the pandemic for us, because, you know, we're chatting over what we're using now too. So we Zoom, Teams, Google Meets, that's, you know, make things a lot easier. But I still do like the personal touch for meeting. I generally go to London once or twice a month, because that's just where people are back in the city now. Although it was quite weird during the pandemic. I went there not long after the first lockdown ended, got on the tube at 9:30 in the morning, and I walked into Marble Arch, and there was nobody in there. I was like, I can hear trains. Absolutely bizarre times. It's, you know, I just think that's sort of the, I used to work for GE many years ago, and they had a thing called a can-do attitude, which sounded really cheesy to me when I was 25. But actually, it is really true. If you've got a can-do attitude, you're going to get pretty far.
Yeah, no, I think so, because it's like common sense, isn't it? Call it common, but it's not really that common. Can-do attitude. There's so many people in business who have can't-do attitude. Oh, no, you can't do that. That's too difficult. Oh, well, no, that's not really what I've employed to do. So when you've actually, which is what you said before, it's about, it's one of the top five on it, you know, don't be scared to hire good people. Because if you get good people, your business is bound to be successful.
Yeah, totally. You know, I want everyone to succeed, and, you know, I want them to be hunting my job. You know, that's,
yeah, yes. Which is interesting, because I did do a podcast on that about how every leader's number one objective should be to make themselves redundant effectively.
100%. Yeah. You know, the sooner I can be sat back being chairman on a beach in Florida while everyone else is working, the better, you know?
Yeah, no, exactly. Making money while you sleep. But I also like the fact you talked about, you know, understanding what you're good at and actually having a plan, but more importantly, not being afraid to change that plan. Because again, you see people with business plans, and it's generally people who've got 500 page business plans, and it's like, no, this is what it says in the plan. Yeah, but
Exactly. Exactly. And it's like, you won't be able to deliver that.
Yeah, exactly.
make sure that the plans are deliverable. And, you know, you've got to have a plan, otherwise you're just winging it. But there is an element of that as well. And you can't predict the future. So I won't financially forecast more than 3 years because, you know, who knew the pandemic was coming?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, inflation's 9% this week.
It's absolutely a disaster. So what's the pandemic, bearing in mind there's been a massive explosion of homelessness even before the pandemic? Was the pandemic, I hate to say it, good for your business, but did your business grow?
No, it was not good for our business. We lost 20 million of contracts in 2 weeks.
Oh, bloody hell.
Which is not good, ever.
No, that's not good.
So, yeah, I think that in the city, the finances would call that suboptimal. But but luckily, everybody already sort of did flexi working for us and worked. So we were able to pick up, we utilized the furlough schemes where we could. We realigned the strategy of the business and allowed us to develop out the technology platform further because we had a bit more time. Whereas, you know, a lot of the time, our factory stayed open because construction was a key industry, but it made it very hard to build things because it's quite hard for two guys to be carrying a piece of steel when they've got to be 2 meters apart.
Yeah.
it's hard enough building things anyway without having to do it in a hazmat suit. But it was good in the way that it did allow us to realign what we do and realign our strategy. We had a sort of critical business plan, if you like, the parachute cord of what happens. Probably a better plan than the government had for a pandemic, but yeah, nothing really prepares you for what's going to happen. You know, the crisis management. Luckily, our operational team, particularly our SMT, our ops director Carlos, and our financial controller Jules, are amazing. You know, they were just bang on it. Yeah, there was no, I think we all sort of had a week of like, oh my God, what's happening? There's a lockdown. What does this mean? And then we all put our big boy and big girl pants on and dealt with it. And then, you know, just got to get on, haven't you?
No, yeah, you do. So if there's two key things that you would say that you need to avoid, or even just reflect back to when you started, things where you'd say, actually, if I start again, I'll do this differently, what would they be?
Well, I reckon there's more than two.
All right.
I think I could be a separate podcast. Where have you messed up? Hard to say. So I don't really have any regrets in anything because you can't change the past. So there's no point in sort of crying over spilt milk. So I don't really think about it too much, if I'm honest, because, you know, as long as you learn from it, or not maybe, but, you know, as long as you're trying to take a learn from it. I'm sure there's key moments where you wish you'd done things slightly differently. 100%, you know, I'm thinking of like day-to-day moments and interactions with people, clients, loads and loads. As far as like ginormous missteps, touch wood, I don't know if there's been too many, but, you know, I'm sure there are.
No, that's right.
Nothing that sticks in my mind is like, God, I wish I hadn't done that. Or wish it.
Is there anything that you've seen? Because obviously you've now worked in you work in your own business, but you've seen lots of other people's businesses. So what have you seen things that you'd say, and I don't want any names, obviously, but have you seen things where you think, oh, yeah, that's a common mistake that people are making and they need to really just avoid that?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's There's loads of business I look at and think, I'd love to come in and run this business. I'd have this streamlined out in a month. And, you see opportunity. But I bet lots of people probably look at our business. And until you look under the hood of somebody else's business, you don't really know what's going on there. You know, you in your mind, I think if you're an entrepreneur and you've got a successful business like we have, probably think you're pretty good. So, you know, I'm probably quite arrogant in a way of a lot of that, being honest. So, you probably think you'd be better at a lot of things. And that is one other business plan you can have. You know, like we started up a totally new business where people didn't do it, but you can make a business in a very good business on doing something someone else is already doing and just being better at it.
Yeah. No. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, Apple is the perfect case in point, isn't it? You know, Apple. I've followed Apple very avidly, and there's very few things that they've brought out that other people have, like the iPod, all those things people had them before.
Just do it better.
They're just rubbish. You know, Windows had an iPod, and loads of different people had iPods and iPad, but they're just rubbish. And then Apple comes out.
Yeah, exactly. I am a big Apple fan. I've got an Apple phone watch. This is a MacBook and an iPad knocking around. You know, and I love the fact they all just link and do everything. And then that comes back to like the being anal and the organization.
Well, I'm almost like the complete antithesis. I wouldn't say I'm a Samsung man, but I used to be an Apple man. And then because they got so big it's almost like the opposite, because they locked me down to everything. I felt, I can't allow you to lock me into everything.
I think Apple's probably the longest relationship in my life. Other than maybe Greg.
So just one, because I know we both got a hard stop. So just a couple of other things. So one of the things I know that you're a firm believer in is you get out what you put in.
Can you just
elaborate on what that actually means?
I say one of the biggest direct examples of polar opposite, when I was at the stockbrokers, however hard you worked directly came out as cash. So, you know, the more trades, the more people, direct output, more money. When I worked previously in a mortgage business, you worked in big sales teams to hit group targets, which was cool, but you might be working three times as hard as someone else in the team and get the same bonus. And I'm very financially driven. So I love that direct output of what you put in, you get out.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's true in life. It's true in business. If you work 20 hours a day smartly, you're going to get more out of it. And, you know, I started off doing sales, and I wasn't the best sales guy in the world for having the patter. Very good administratively, and I worked very hard. And that comes from my upbringing, from my parents. When I was 15, I used to wash crates in a milk factory, and I'd do 15-hour days in the school holidays for £2.50 an hour, whatever it was, because I just wanted to work hard. Yeah. And, you know, the more you work, the more money you get. And it's just, it's the input output driven. You know, you can work smart within that, of course, but you know, I just think I'm a bit, you know, everything, whether that be business, relationships, life, what you get out, what you put in.
It's very interesting, actually, because I don't know if you've heard of Vern Harnish. He's also scaling up, and he's got a business which is all around how do you scale up from small to large businesses. And one of the things he said, he's got like these ridiculously long interviews with really structured interview questions. And he said, one of the most important interview questions, and you just triggered my mind, he said, is don't ask them about their degree. Don't ask them about university. Ask them what they did in their teenage years.
Because
that really gives you insight as to what sort of.
So I went to university. I went to Brunel in London, and I just drifted away my university years in bars and loafing around with my housemates and playing Pro Evolution Soccer and golf.
Oh, yes.
Things like that. And I did business studies, computer programming, and I didn't know anything about business when I left university. I knew what a macroeconomic curve was, which was essentially useless. You know, they don't teach you about how a mortgage works anything real life useful. So I've actually done a few guest lectures slots at the university here and talked about entrepreneurship and business. And I've loved it. And I've tried to make those lectures really relevant to people. I thought they're relevant. They might have thought they're rubbish, but they didn't pass it back. They can't have been that bad. But it's that the university and schooling is a tick box process, a lot of it. And I just sort of followed the system. Your formative years are probably before that. And then your business influencing years, you know, so I worked for a guy down here who had a business that he made worth 100 million, a mortgage brokerage, and he was a very successful, driven individual and also worked for big corporates, G Capital and the banks. So I saw sort of both sides of an owner-run business that was very successful, to some horrible big corporates, to some great stuff from big corporates. So we've always been very process-driven. Ever since day one at ISO Spaces, we've put a bit of a corporate structure in place, whether that be doing one-to-ones with people, just having a process, having a plan. And as we built the business, that served us in really good stead because we've always had that firm footing and a structure to what we do. And that's something that's really important to me. And that's something I learned from the big corporate. I don't believe in a lot of the big corporate stuff. You know, some of it can be mindless. And likewise, I learned loads from the guy who had his own mortgage business that he'd grown up. And that was something that was inspiring. A lot of it to do with the money and the growth. But also there was some really bad management in that business. And you learn from that and you learn what it's as important as to learn from what's bad as what's good.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point, because I when people talk to me about, what was a good boss, what was a bad boss, because I often get that question. I say, well, to be honest, there's people who are worse than others, but I've learned from every single one of them. And as he said, even my first manager I ever had was probably the worst, if you talk about traditional manager I've ever had, but I still learned things from her, because I thought, yeah, I'll never do that. If I manage people, yeah, I'm never going to do that.
So our ops director is he was my first best manager, so I knew he's the best people manager I'd ever met. So when we got to a size we needed managers, I headhunted him for a long time to get him into our business, and he's amazing. You know, he's a brilliant people manager, and that's so important to have.
All right, so we're coming to the end. I just want to get a few tips to my listeners in terms of, because I read quite a few business books. I don't know, do you read any books? Is there anything? Or
I don't actually say
books. I don't need to, you see, because you're so successful.
I don't know about that. I think
you need to write one.
I'm probably too more ignorant. I'm going to write a book one day, definitely. Yeah, my memoirs. But I read a lot on the internet. So, and I speak to a lot of people. And more that way. Greg, avid business book reader, like a human library, loves it. And I'm an avid reader, but I like to use reading to wind down. So
I am the same, but I thought for some reason business books do help me. I don't know, they just seem to pop the sight of the neurons, and I start thinking, oh, I can do that. So when I'm on holiday, I do tend to read fiction, but then I'll read a business book at the same time. So I do get through quite a few of them, but that's just me. That's
I'll tell you what I'm reading at the moment is How to Play Roulette, because I'm going to Vegas next week. So
so you are a planner, aren't you?
I have a planner. Yeah, although I'm not sure if you can plan roulette. I'm trying to come up with a defensive strategy rather than an attacking one.
Oh, interesting. Okay, so last question for me: what's the best advice you've ever been given?
So we had a business mentor called Claire Whitney, who worked for Oxford Innovation, and she used to give me and Greg therapy sessions. So while it wasn't like a key nugget of advice, there was a sort of mind-opening moment, she just was brilliant for loads. But we used to just sit there and just whinge and rage and chat, and she would just listen, basically, and write down the key points on a board. And yeah, we used to call it therapy session. So rather, there wasn't just one golden bullet, if you like, of nugget, but it was that sounding board and that realization that there's something. I mean, obviously, getting on the fast tracks and things like that's been brilliant. But I would say that earlier advice was much more important.
Well, I think that comes back to one of your tips, doesn't it, in terms of getting advice from people. And actually, it's amazing. And I keep saying this to people, because there's different levels of success, isn't there? And I think when I look at business leaders, a lot of them don't get coaching, which is what you're talking about. They don't get
A lot of people don't believe in the coaching,
But what I see is high-performing individuals and generally entrepreneurs always tend to have some kind of, whether it's an official coach or a coaching group or something of that nature.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, if you were a high-level sportsman, you'd get coached every day.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You wouldn't go, like, oh, I'm brilliant at football, so that's it.
Exactly. Well, Ben, it's been an absolute pleasure. The time has actually rushed by.
I know. I was thinking that. I was thinking, an hour. how am I going to talk for an hour? And then I thought, of course I can talk for an hour.
No, I appreciate it. I know my listeners will appreciate it. But no, thank you very much. It's been a blast.
Thanks. Brilliant. Hey, thanks very much, Hakeem. Take care. You have a great day.
So thanks very much, Ben. I hope everybody enjoyed that as much as I did. I didn't really think that an hour could pass so quickly. So as I said at the outset, engaging, great advice. And we got some real fantastic tips about how to turn an idea into a real business. And the real nugget for me, and there's lots, so if you've listened to it, you'd have heard, you know, about 6 or 7 points that Ben went through in terms of the key things to turn that idea into a business, and actually just generally how to manage a business in its entirety anyway. But the one that really stood out for me was have a plan, and that probably stood out because I love planning. But then more importantly than having a plan, be prepared to change as circumstances change. So it's about having a plan, but having that flexibility. So really enjoyed that. I'm sure you did. And if you did, 1, please subscribe. 2, pick up the show notes from the website. And then also, if you liked it, rate the podcast. And if you didn't, as I always say, keep it to yourself. So all the links for subscribing, getting the show notes and rating the podcast are in the podcast description. So thank you very much. Keep listening and keep growing.